Welcome to the Leaders in Payments podcast, where we talk to C-level leaders from across the payments landscape. We'll be discussing the products and services that impact the payment space today, as well as trends and predictions for the future of payments. We will also hear stories from our guests about their journeys to the top.
Embedding these things, and embedded is really just a word for making the term invisible. Nobody wants to pay. People want to buy, shop, and get paid. Get their money, right? Like nobody actually wants to do a payments transaction. So if you think about that as it relates to lending, if it relates to issuing, if it relates to DDA, if it relates to payroll and other value-added services, it's just how do you just make it instantly on and happen within the system? And I think that is the future experience that people are going to be looking for when I think about 10 years out in whatever medium is around. Joke about it, whether that's in the metaverse or that's in watching television. How do I just make commerce happen in those circumstances? And that's kind of the future of embedded services.
Season's greetings, everyone, and welcome to the next episode. This one is a special one, not only because it's our 200th episode, but we have a real mover and shaker in the payment space to help us celebrate it. He's a 30-year payments veteran with a passion for flying, and he's a self-proclaimed fintech geek. He's Fortis CEO Greg Cohen, and he's truly a leader in payments. Fortis is a fintech company with a mission to make software companies better through embedded payments. They offer a processor-neutral gateway that caters specifically to the hospitality, healthcare, specialty, retail, B2B markets, and many more. The company's edge in the marketplace revolves around the guided journey for their customers. This means customers can use their gateway, proprietary technology, go-to-market guidance, and feature functionality to walk, jog, or run towards their goal of being a payment facilitator, an ISO or agent, or a successful referral partner. Whatever their destination, Fortis can guide the journey. Greg and I go on to talk about the upcoming trends, including an uptick in mergers and acquisitions, the globalization of omnichannel payments, and a faster path towards the embedded experience. We've got a great episode ahead, so let's get started. Hi, Greg. Thank you for being here, and welcome to the Leaders in Payments podcast.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate you having me, especially for this monumental number 200 show, so looking forward to it.
Thank you. I appreciate you mentioning that, and I was thinking about that before coming on. It was like, January 13th of 2020, I had Brian Gowdy, the CEO of Aurora Payments, who I know, Greg, you know well. Brian was my first guest, and then here we are 200 episodes later. I feel very lucky to have you on, Greg. You're obviously well-known in the industry, have a great reputation, and I wanted to thank you in advance for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Looking forward to it, and great to be following such amazing folks.
Well, let's dive right in. If you don't mind, tell our audience a little bit about yourself, maybe where you grew up, where you went to school, where you currently live, a few things like that.
Sure. So I grew up in Northern Virginia, a suburb of Washington, D.C. I went to college in Atlanta, went to undergrad at Emory, and got my master's probably 5 years later at George Washington University back in the D.C. area, and then hustled back to Atlanta because I think by default, I had a friend who was in the payments industry and said, hey, you want to go start an ISO? So I didn't know what that was at the time, but that's what brought me back to Atlanta, where I spent a big chunk of my early career. And interestingly enough, I've kind of hopped around geographically a lot. I live in Phoenix today, been here the last 2 years, but I've spent 5 years in Chicago, or I'd say 5 winters in Chicago, 5 years in Northern California in the Bay Area, and 5 years in LA in the Southern California area as well. So I've been a lot of different places.
Well, let's talk about the company Fortis. So tell the audience what Fortis does.
It's really simple. We try to make software companies better through embedded payments. Almost all of our focus and our attention is with our software partners, our ERP partners, our hotel management software partnerships, finding ways to create better payments and commerce experiences inside their software, leveraging our technology, our payments capability, and some of our value-added solutions around that. Obviously, the business itself has grown a lot in the last 3 years since taking some outside capital from our partner, Lovell Minnick Partners, who's a mid-market private equity firm. But we've made 10 acquisitions in that time, part of it to, you know, kind of expand our platform, right? So that our platform, which you all would know is a processor neutral gateway, all the way through a PayFac, all the way through acquiring capabilities with an ACH engine. And we're super horizontal in the verticals that we can support. We spend most of our go-to-market time in kind of four or five core verticals. And over that time, we continue to grow extremely fast. We have almost 250 people on the team now. We do over $20 billion of processing volume throughout North America. And we continue to bring on new software partners and customers in those geographies and are looking to expand even further from there.
What are those core verticals?
Number one is hospitality. Actually, the original founders of Fortis were hoteliers. And interestingly enough, we wound up in the hotel world, but we've expanded from there. We do have all of those old Micros Oracle integrations. We also have a handful of other good-sized software partners in the hotel space. But we've expanded from there into wineries and breweries, and even with some of our Micros partners have gotten into restaurants and some of those markets as well. So hospitality would definitely be one. Number two is our healthcare. It's actually really specialty medical, where we play with chiropractors and acupuncturists and physical therapists and kind of that almost called auxiliary medicine. In addition, we do have a couple new really good-sized medical billers on the platform too, not only taking advantage of what we can do in the physical world and recurring payments, but also from an invoicing standpoint and billing standpoint, which marries up into some of our other segments. Number three, what we call our specialty retail segment, where we play with consignment. We've got a ton of consignment store integrations, pawn, camping and fishing and even shooting sports go into kind of our recreational capabilities and our specialty retail verticals. Most of those segments did extremely well during the COVID time periods and continue to do well today. And then number four, we've made a big investment in the B2B space, where we've got native integrations into some of the mid-market kind of ERP solutions. And we're expanding both directly with our ERP publishers, which those would be the ERP companies themselves, and with the VARs, which are the distribution channel that they go solution sell with. And so we've got partnerships and have made some acquisitions in and about that area that we continue to invest a lot in. If you think about it, the underpenetrated areas, B2B is a huge opportunity. We see it, I think, like a lot of other folks do too.
Is there something common across those verticals, or is it just that they're all using software to run their businesses, so that's more the play?
Part of it is also we look for verticals where we really have a subject matter expert, our champions in the segment, where, you know, if you think about the acquisitions we've made, some have been real leaders in a given area. And then we not only allow them to leverage the Fortis technology, but then put more and more resources behind them. So we can take a sales team of five and turn it into a sales team of 15 or marketing resources or develop, as you all think about it, those one or two little specific nuanced solutions that are needed for that given vertical. And that kind of specialization in that vertical, not only knowing the talk, having the brand, but also those little kind of nuances that you can build when you own your own technology into that segment that can really make you really have a right to win in that vertical.
Okay. And do you operate in other countries outside of the U.S.?
Yeah, we just this year we opened up Canada. So we are a North American client today. But one of the interesting things is because our partners are mostly software providers, every software provider I have found has desires for global domination. If they get there or not, you know, but you got to provide them that on road in the path. So we do have a roadmap with build out into Europe and then beyond, but we are a North American company today.
And is your go-to-market strategy, do you have a direct sales team or do you mainly work through these partner channels?
Our model is that we've got a business development team in the different verticals where we go out. Their job is to help find new software partners, ERPs, healthcare, even some associations that we do work with and things like that. The business development efforts are around that. We've got a partner team that then goes, manages them, and helps manage and solution for those given partners. And then we have multiple models. This is one of our core differentiator is that we can set up that software provider in a few different models. We can light them up as a payment facilitator or a PayFac. They can operate as an ISO or an agent in a reseller model. They can be a referral partner and leverage our institutional sales team. We have 50 people who are dedicated full-time to selling into and against and with our channel partners in their given verticals. One of the things that we've realized is that you can have great technology, you can have great software, and you can have a great, you know, payments plugin. But if they're not using it, it really doesn't matter. And so one of the things that we offer is the ability to leverage our sales assist team to help drive adoption. And obviously in some verticals, click to agree works fine and you can get 90, 95% adoption. In other verticals, you need to get on the phone and you need to make that happen. And we've got the ability to help software providers with that as well. And all of that off of a single platform.
And you mentioned sort of that flexibility of kind of the model as being a differentiator, but what are your other differentiators?
We call it our guided journey. That is our differentiator, is that you can come in as a software customer. You can come in, you can leverage our processor neutral gateway. We prefer to be the processor. The experience is more end-to-end for sure. But for that one customer who's with Wells Fargo or B of A or even some other ISO, we can actually allow that transaction to work. On the other side, though, they can come in and think about the walk, jog, run approach to payments within a software ecosystem. We can provide a referral relationship all the way up through a PayFac off of the exact same integration. And so that guided journey and then the ability to do specialized feature builds and things like that around the software is really our core differentiators. This guided journey up and down the stack of business operations for a software company. And that really is what differentiates us from the other players that play in kind of the embedded payments or the integrated payments segments.
So does that lend you guys to having to be very good business consultants? It's not a transactional sale. It sounds like you really have to understand that software company who is not a payments expert. You need to guide them into what the right solution is.
That's exactly right. If somebody just grabbed my APIs and go, and we get a lot, look, Stripe's built an amazing business around amazing experiences and amazing technology, and it works really well in this and that and the other. If that's what someone wants, there's lots of providers out there if they can do it all on their own. But where we come in is really helping solution around technology, around go-to-market, around feature functionality. It's embedding things like not just the transaction, but it's embedding the enrollment capabilities or adoption capabilities. It's embedding the reporting and the data that's needed back for the software provider. It's posting back to the GL. It's those things that really help differentiate.
Is the growth strategy more verticals or going deeper within existing or maybe some of both?
It's a little of both. The way we think about new verticals, we can move into adjacent verticals organically. But if we're going to go into a brand new vertical, most likely it will be through M&A. Thinking about our champion model, if Fortis were to just show up in a vertical we're not in today, nobody knows who we are, we don't know the space, we're going to make lots of mistakes, it takes a long time to get there. It's much better to partner with a champion, and that's what we've done in most of the cases with our M&A, in a vertical where we can provide then the resources to really scale it out. That's how we've continued to evolve. But within some of our verticals alone, in our B2B vertical, in our hospitality vertical, there's a lot to continue, even mining the software partnerships that we have today. If I think about things like under Oracle and under Microsoft and under other software partners that we've got in the space, there's a lot of work still to be done inside of the integrations we have today.
Where do you see the payments industry heading in, say, the next 2 to 3 years?
The next 2 to 3 years. Look, I think we are at an interesting time in the payments industry. There's definitely haves and have-nots. We're definitely an interesting time from a financial standpoint in this. I'm expecting to see a fair amount of M&A in the next 2 to 3 years. Not that we haven't seen a lot in the past either. We tend to go through these cycles, but I think you're going to see more of it as people are looking to build scale and or have technology and distribution that they couldn't get otherwise in a market environment where people are, you know, questioning different things. There's players out there that need tools that they didn't have in the past. And there's folks, quite honestly, that maybe aren't equipped to go to the next level and are thinking about exits as well. So just from a macro thematic standpoint, I think you're going to see an influx of kind of M&A over the next couple of years. But from a technology standpoint, I think you're going to find, and not that it hasn't already started, a faster path towards an invisible or embedded experience in more and more segments, right? You've seen it in restaurant retail for sure. But as you start to think about some of these other verticals, you're going to see that continuing to morph and migrate into areas like insurance and in healthcare and B2B and some of these other areas that have been laggards from adoption and from integration and things like that. You're going to see them start to pick up, and a much more globalization of how people think about acceptance as they tend to even look for more buyers of their products. And so these kind of things coming together, and we've talked about the payments and software kind of merging into one. I think you're going to start to see that in more and more verticals. And I think you're going to see the omni-channel capabilities and the globalization play out at a much faster rate over the next 3 years. And it will be interesting with a backdrop of what's going to be some slower growth stuff and seeing who survives and who comes out of that with that backdrop of the M&A environment.
You're probably familiar with the words buy now, pay later. How it has grown exponentially over the past couple of years and is still one of the hottest trends in payments. It's become a norm for retailers to provide a buy now, pay later payment option for their customers, many of whom no longer want to use credit cards for larger purchases. Business leaders are tasked with finding a payment solution that offers a seamless digital customer experience that results in increased sales. Citizens Pay is a buy now, pay later solution created by Citizens that helps retailers drive sales and increase loyalty by providing customers with transparent installment financing, longer repayment terms, and a dedicated line of credit for repeat purchases. It's also optimized for merchants looking to offer a payment option to consumers with more mature and sophisticated purchases in mind, like a new living room set, fitness equipment, or a kitchen appliance. With Citizens Pay, merchants have the security of a leading national bank and an omni-channel platform designed to streamline the buying process. If you want to learn more about Citizens Pay, follow the link in our bio or visit citizenspay.com/podcast, where you can find additional information about Citizens Pay and the Buy Now, Pay Later payment model. This podcast is part of a paid partnership between Citizens Pay and the Leaders in Payments podcast. Embedded payments has been around for several years now, and I think a new buzzword is embedded finance, where you're not only embedding payments, but other things that a traditional bank used to do, right? Loans and insurance and other things. I mean, is that something that's in the future for you guys? Are you doing some of that now, or kind of what is your view on the embedded finance trend?
Look, I would tell you embedded value-added services inside of software platforms really is something that you are going to be seeing driven from the software platforms for sure. Now, the question is, who are these platforms going to get their embedded services from? And embedded finance is part of those offerings. The question I always have is, I think in the low end, and you see this with Stripe, right? In the low end, I think a one-stop shop is the right answer. You know, as you migrate up to larger merchants and larger platforms, they're going to look for best in breed. And so maybe you're getting your embedded lending solution directly from a lender, and you're getting your embedded payment solution directly from a payment provider. These will kind of merge and come together. You're seeing it with Square and the acquisitions that they made of Afterpay, and you can get great solutions from a single provider. So you're going to see kind of a hybrid of that, where I think the payments ecosystem fits into that is where things that are natural adjacencies to the payments transaction, things like buy now, pay later, things like merchant capital, because you're driving it straight down, and in many cases, using the payments as a receivable or a way to pay that back in areas where maybe loyalty solutions, things of that sort. Getting into DDAs and things of that sort are probably more probably set for the banks outside of the super small platforms, right, that you might get with a startup mobile developer. But I think it is embedding these things, and embedded is really just a word for making the term invisible. Nobody wants to pay. People want to buy, shop, and get paid, get their money, right? Like, nobody actually wants to do a payments transaction. So if you think about that as it relates to lending, if it relates to issuing, if it relates to DDA, if it relates to payroll and other value-added service, it's just how do you just make it instantly on and happen within the system? And I think that is the future experience that people are going to be looking for when I think about 10 years out, in whatever medium is around. Joke about it, whether that's in the metaverse or that's in watching television. How do I just make commerce happen in those circumstances? And that's kind of the future of embedded services.
So you think 10 years from now, the frictionless stuff that we talk about these days is going to become much more of a reality.
If you think about where we are 10 years ago, and you had thought that the phone would play such a large part in the payments ecosystem, or that the checkout experience you now have with Apple, where you put your finger down and boom, not only are your payments credentials passed, but so is your shipping location and address and all the other things, that combination of identification or authentication and payments kind of coming together in a single experience. Think about the fact that why, and that's not just for the credential on the consumer side from the card, but think about the acceptance side as well. Why in the world do I need to go to a checkout counter and slow everything down? Not to mention, there's a device sitting there. I'm on my phone, for the most part, Verizon or T-Mobile, whatever I have, plus probably Google or Apple know exactly where I'm standing. The point of sale system is in the cloud anyway. They know exactly where the physical location is. Why do I need a payments acceptance device between the consumer and the business? Like, some of these things just fundamentally don't make sense to have an ecosystem, and quite frankly, causes friction to sell more because I've got to go stand in queue in order to do those transactions opposed to just kind of shopping and buying. Why do I have to stop and pay?
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I mean, that's, I think, the future. And it's interesting because you mentioned, you know, 10 years ago, I came in this industry like 17, 18 years ago, and we thought it was innovative to take a Verifone terminal and have it painted blue so that it was Chase blue, right? And now we're talking about removing devices and self-checkout and completely frictionless transactions and doing everything over the phone. It's just amazing. And we talk about the payments industry a lot, and just the innovation is like there's no end in sight.
Now jump that into the B2B ecosystem or healthcare payment system, where you're talking about huge amounts of volume. And think about the fact that 30% of healthcare bills don't get paid, right? Think about what I can do to digitize that and what the benefit to the business, in that case, the practitioner or the hospital, is in that digitization of that experience in a B2B world, so I don't have to send out an invoice and wait 60 days to get paid. And all of these things that just create massive inefficiencies when you kind of bring these things together, especially in areas where they have had lack of investment. Retail, as we all know, retail and restaurant have had huge investments when you think about Square and Clover and Lightspeed, Touch Bistro, and all these new cool point of sale things that's going on. Now start looking at what's happening in like hospitals and big B2B enterprises or insurance agencies or universities. Like, they're still running old legacy, non-cloud based. As those migrate into more modern systems as well, those ecosystems digitize at the same point. So I think there's a lot of opportunity if you think about where we still have to go here.
Absolutely. Well, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about you. So tell us about your journey to your role there as the CEO.
Well, almost 30 years in the payments industry. So I was lucky early in my career. I was part of Global Payments when we first spun out of National Data Corporation. And so many people don't know that Global Payments was actually a corporate carve out or a spin out, and really got to, through some of my customers who were the early integrated payments customers, Mercury Payments and PayPros and Cam Commerce, which became APT. They were the early innovators in integrated payments. And, you know, I was lucky enough at Global to run the ISO business and then run the banking channels as well, and then whatever was there. And so, you know, that was kind of, I attached myself to a hyper growth business and was lucky enough to work with Paul and Garcia and Jim Kelly and that group, and really kind of be there as that business was growing and scaling up. I took an opportunity. I really wanted to go run a business. So Jim Baumgartner, who was the CEO of Moneris at the time, gave me the opportunity to move to Chicago and be the president of Moneris, which was a great opportunity to have a full P&L and run a business and do all of that. That was exciting. I mean, I learned a lot working for two competing banks, if you can imagine what that's like, the Royal Bank of Canada and the Bank of Montreal. But I learned a ton and did more kind of understanding kind of some of the regulatory pieces and compliance pieces having to deal with being inside of a bank. And then spent the last 15 years or so with either private equity or hedge fund backed businesses, the executive teams of companies like Cayan, which sold to TSYS, or iPayment, which we sold to Paysafe, or then partnering with a private equity firm and doing the Sage Payment Solutions carve out. It's now Paya going through the SPAC. And so got to learn a ton through that, which in all cases got me to learn a little bit more about different things on each piece, taking what you had learned in the past to the next level and really positioned myself, at least. Got to partnered with the private equity firm, made this investment with some folks I knew at the original FortisPay team, made that investment, and then kind of helped them navigate M&A, the private equity world, scaling up a business to do and create what we have here at Fortis now, which is not only a great business, but a great team and a great team of partners that we've had to put it together.
What are some things you're passionate about? So maybe one work-related passion and one personal passion.
Most people know I'm a fintech geek. I'm an investor as well as kind of run a business. So I'm a kind of venture growth equity investor in a lot of little businesses around. I'm an LP in some venture funds and really kind of enjoy kind of the networking side of payments. I mean, some of my best friends, believe it or not, are kind of in the payments ecosystem through my career. Like, not only do you create business colleagues, but great friends as well. And that's one of the things that's really been fun. And I actually like giving back a little bit in that as well. I think as some folks know, I was president of the ETA, but above that, I'm still very involved with that. And lots of people call me and I'll be more than happy to give them my two cents, whether they want it or not, on, you know, their business ideas or directions. I really enjoy kind of giving back to folks in the payment space and always there for that. Now, outside of payments and outside of work, I still enjoy working out, try to get that done, you know, 4 or 5 times a week because it keeps me mentally sane. It's kind of my escape. I also like to fly airplanes around. That is one of my passions. It's interesting when it's cloudy and gray on the ground, you kind of bust through that layer of clouds and you get up about 3,000 feet above that LA marine layer. And it's just sunny and great. You're just, all your thoughts are gone. So to me, that is just one of the great experiences in life of just kind of flying and being out there and doing things like that. And so to me, that's kind of one of my great escapes.
So curious, how did you get into flying?
It's kind of funny. It's kind of after 9/11, got a little tired of waiting in lines and this and that. And I'm like, I'm going to go try this. And I was in Chicago at the time. And I took one of those tour flights they do to try to hook you in. Something about it was one of those perfect days. And I'm like, wow. And I'm one of those guys that, like, I got a challenge. I got to go get to it, right? And it was one of those things. I got to go get my private license. And then I got to get my instrument. And then I got to go move up to this or move up to that. But it was really just kind of proximity. It was time. Because it does take up a lot of time to be good at anything else you do. But that kind of got me into it. And then you kind of get hooked like anybody else. Anyone who's got that, plenty of colleagues, even some of our folks on our exec team at Fortis, and even some of my team at Moneris used to do like marathons, or they do triathlons, or they do these different things. And it was like, but why do you do the next one? Because it's there and I'm pushing myself to get there. And I think that's the same in work as it is in your personal life. If you're driven, you find something you're passionate about, and you just want to get to the next level or hit the next project or knock the next thing out of the ballpark.
Yeah. Well, that's a good segue into the next question. You know, I always preface it with, I got into payments 17 years ago or whatever it was, never got out, but I didn't do it on purpose. It wasn't like I looked at this industry and said, hey, I want to build a career here. But I think people coming out of school these days see payments and fintech as a pretty hot industry. There's been a lot of innovation. There's been a lot of money invested. So the question is, what advice would you give someone who's coming out of college, he's looking at payments or she's looking at payments as an industry that they want to build a career in? What would you tell them to do to be successful?
I kind of have two different things. One's from a business owner standpoint and the other's from just a educational, I'm a newbie, want to do it standpoint. So let's start with the newbie. To me, it's taking a broad view of payments. I started in kind of that acquiring world, kind of started with the ISO stuff and then to the bank, really just kind of stuck to kind of core acquiring, right? And I think as the world has morphed, if you take that approach, you really limit yourself in a career. Like if you can get exposure to not just the accounts receivable side, but the AR side, not just acquiring, but maybe card issuing and virtual card and things like that, and not just some agent channel, but also maybe you start to think about what it's like to sell direct or different ecosystems or different verticals. I think that is a much better position for the long haul because Many people I know have gotten so pigeonholed in what I might call the legacy ecosystems or just core acquiring. As I look out the next 5 to 10 years, all of these different areas of payments are kind of coming together. And you have to have a much more holistic view of payments than just thinking about acquiring. And I think that is critically important when you start to think about the future of payments is really at the intersection of kind of the software and customer experience meets issuing and acquiring and acceptance and all those pieces. So having that more holistic view, I think, would be a really good thing to learn in your first 3 to 5, and hopefully at an organization that allows you to do that. If it doesn't, because they're laser focused on X or Y, find other opportunities in your side time to learn and to get involved with, you know, things outside of that comfort zone.
Okay. And you were going to talk about from the business perspective?
Yeah. I think this is more of a time than ever, if you're in payments, to think about focus and verticals. Software, as much as payments, is becoming highly, highly verticalized. You joke about your Verifone terminal, right? That same Verifone terminal worked for every vertical out there, including even e-commerce, because people would key it in into the Verifone device, right? That is software and payments growth and opportunity and value. I talk about my investment stuff, right? It's very vertically focused, right? So if you can really be an expert in a segment in your business, you are worth a ton. Doesn't mean you always have to own every piece of technology in that segment. But if you understand it, you can make it work and you can build a defensible position growing a business in that area. That will be where your long-term defensive value comes from that will allow you to kind of be a win, as I've been told. What's your right to win? If you can be an expert in that vertical and build things around that, I think that's really where you're going to do the best. That's in any segment, issuing, acquiring, international, e-commerce, retail. But what that vertical is what will really differentiate.
That's great advice. Well, Greg, we've covered a lot of ground. We've talked a lot about you and your journey, the industry as a whole, Fortis and what Fortis is doing. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
Just first of all, appreciate you doing this. Appreciate you having me as your 200th guest, but putting this together so that people can hopefully learn from all of our mistakes and our wins over our careers. But this is a great industry that just has left, for myself at least, a lot of lessons. I've learned a lot. I've gotten a lot from it and look forward to giving more back to it. Thanks for the platform.
Absolutely. Well, Greg, thank you so much for being on the show. I know your time is very valuable, so thank you so much again for being here.
Appreciate it, Greg.
And to all you listeners out there, I thank you for your time as well. And until the next story.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Leaders in Payments podcast. Make sure you visit our website at leadersinpayments.com, where you can subscribe to the show and where you'll find our show notes. If you enjoyed listening, please share on your social channels as well.